I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Today, with me sharing the microphone is my husband, J.C. Hall.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here.
And this show, we have J.C. Hall with us because we're going to be talking about some things today that have to do with the second part of what the Hall family mission is. We are not just traveling around the country and teaching the Constitution. We are also missionaries to Haiti. And so what I'd like to do is explain first, why is Haiti relevant to our constitutional mission? When I talk about Haiti, our Haiti mission on Facebook, it is not unusual for me to have people come on Facebook and say, Chris Ann, I'm an American. Why does this matter to me? Why does Haiti matter? Why is it that I should support your mission to Haiti when we're concerned about the Constitution? And so I want to bring this question to my husband and say, look, if you're answering that question to people on Facebook, why is it relevant to the overall Hall mission as well?
Well, I would say, first off, if you don't think it's important, then you shouldn't support the mission. That's number one. But why is it important? There's a lot of ways you can answer that question, a lot of different angles. So from a political perspective, I guess for lack of a better term, I think of Haiti kind of like Cuba. You know, it's here it is right off our doorstep in Florida. I mean, it's only maybe an hour or less flight from Miami to Haiti. So it's very close, as far as being a threat or benefit to American interest or American security, etc., from a political perspective.
So in the very least, we want to be good friends.
Right. And I think about, for instance, when we were down there a couple of years ago, obviously they had the tremendous earthquake, the tremendous tragedy with the earthquake, and the reins were sort of handed over to the Clintons to be the gatekeepers of relief. And many people know the corruption that followed because of that. And there was really sort of an opportunity to be friends and be good neighbors with the country. But I think in many ways, if you go to Haiti, you'll discover that the Clintons did not make friends or good neighbors out of the people there, except the people who are interested in being corrupt. But one of the things we saw while we were there was China had sort of stepped in to fill the void of diplomacy and friendly relations, as well as Russia. So you have a lot of people talking about, Russia and China and different places competing against America and not doing things in America's best interest. And I'm sure, there are many points of that that's debatable. But nevertheless, we made sort of bad, unfriendly relations while other countries were making friendly relations. So in the very least, to be able to not make an enemy and to make friends, I think George Washington spoke something like that. So we should be friends with all nations, rights, entanglements with none. So
Jefferson had that perspective as well.
Right. So then that would be the opposite of making enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we did, we sent the Clintons down there, and there's a lot of animosity toward America because of those things and things that are still going on from the American government
those,
today.
Those things being those things that the Clintons did while they are doing still down there.
Right. As well as our current government and the leftovers from the Clinton administration, Bush administration, Obama administration, you know, and the sort of government behind the people that we elect and the policies that continue for decades that we're still doing. So there's still problems. So I'd say to simplify that from a political perspective, to be able to have good relations and make friends with somebody who's right on your doorstep. You know, that was the big concern. You think back to the so-called Cuban Missile Crisis and the big concern back in, you know, the Cold War era with JFK. And the big thing was, oh, this is this country that's 90 miles off of our border. And what an easy threat if they're enemies and not friends. Well, Haiti is right across the Windward Passage, right across the bay from Cuba. It's practically, you know, the same sort of distance in broad terms, the same general area. So I think it would behoove us to have good relations.
The other thing that really piqued my interest about this correlation between our Constitution and our relationship with Haiti has to do with an article that you sent me from the Foundation for Economic Education, written by Michael Kastner. And this was, for me, this was like, bam, light bulb, right? How stupid. This is the most enlightening thing that I've seen as far as relationships go. And it is how this Michael Kastner shows how our congressmen are keeping Haiti impoverished and dependent, government dependent, not just simply dependent upon their own government, but dependent on all government.
Right.
While at the same time using that forced dependency of Haiti to increase the taxes on Americans.
Right.
So you're better at this economic stuff and you know all about this. Tell my audience how Michael Kastner makes this relevant.
Yeah, well, again, we're sort of speaking from this is another point of being able to teach the principles of liberty and export, you know, the principles of natural law and the principles of liberty. You know, that's tied up in, I guess, the political view of it, of making good friends and allies in that sense, of being able to teach them about liberty and not be government dependent and taken advantage of by other governments, including the American government. You know, and this is not even the obvious reason, you know, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. So that's someone who has need and we're, from a gospel perspective, called to help. And so that's one of our primary reasons why we do it. But just to sort of look from a different perspective, this is another one of those things. This has been an ongoing problem where that America in particular is dumping sort of agricultural surplus products into Haiti.
Kastner calls it a term called crop dumping.
Right, crop dumping.
Uh-huh.
This happened. You will hear the term in Haiti, Miami rice. Because so much American rice was dumped into the Haitian market and negatively impacted the native crops, the native rice crops, and practically devastated the rice industry. The same thing has happened to sugar, their sugar industry, and then peanuts. The peanut industry was a big thing last year about this time. The USDA was going to dump, you know, so many tons of peanuts, and I think they did. So it really hurts the markets in Haiti and keeps their indigenous market sort of debilitated, and in my opinion keeps the corrupt portion of foreign aid and help rolling. So foreign aid in a governmental sense in many cases is not really aid. It's actually sort of a system of graft where they keep the need going, and certain corporations and producers and, you know, people that are tied in with corporate cronyism get these contracts, and it's just really harmful to a nation like Haiti.
Well, it seems to be a means of slavish control over the people.
It's an economic slavery. It really is.
When we were in Haiti, you could see the remnants of farmlands everywhere. And even back when Haiti was a French colony, sugar was a huge production there. I mean, the sugarcane fields everywhere. And now, I mean, there's nothing. There's weeds. And how could a place go from being such a huge producer to being completely irrelevant in production because they're being flooded with all this stuff.
Yeah, you have to remember, you know, the island of Hispaniola, the DR and Haiti, was known as the Pearl of the Antilles. They were the major agricultural production center, you know, in our hemisphere. And so through what I call mutual corruption, so it's not just external factors, you know, there are some people that, oh, it's colonialism and all these imperialist Americans came in and destroyed it. Well, it was mutual corruption. So corruption from United Nations and America, as well as the indigenous politicians, the people that have taken control of various aspects of the government. So just a lot of greed and corruption goes into that, and it really hurts. Just like here, it hurts the regular man on the street because it's government run amok.
Because Haitian farmers can't compete with the prices of free stuff.
Right, exactly.
And that's why this is important. We have an important relationship, but we have a mission of liberty. We are always liberty first. In order for us to bring liberty to Haiti, we have to teach them to be self-sufficient and not government dependent. I want you to talk about our mission to Haiti. Talk about this sailboat that we're on right now, why our sailboat, the mission sailboat is important, how we use it, and how people can really become a part of this mission as well.
Well, we've been crewing on a boat with Islander Evangelistic Ministries. That's the ministry that we work with. And so we were praying for a boat of our that our family could pilot. And so a family in Kima, Texas has donated this boat to the ministry. It's 1976 Islander Freeport 41. And so, you know, we have work to do here and there to get it seaworthy, get ready to make our trip into Haiti. We're going to be going into Haiti in June and then again in the fall. And so we carry humanitarian aid and supplies, relief supplies, and try to go down there and again spread the gospel first and foremost. Then at the same time, teach sound principles of liberty, of natural law, and try to teach them self-sufficiency and help do business development and community development so that government dependency and corruption is not exported from the U.S. We kind of want to be the competition of the corrupt. I mean, we've seen so many of these big, huge agencies, and it's just so much corruption and graft, and we want to make a real difference.
When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about some of those specific things.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back. After the break, I have with me my husband, J.C. Hall, and we're talking about the other half of the Hall family mission, our mission to Haiti. And the first segment, we talked about why that's important. And now we're going to say, we're explaining what it is that we do specifically. And my husband was telling us about how we bring humanitarian aid and how we community build and how we spread the gospel. Tell us, what are we doing that's important to create to the creation of self-sufficiency rather than government dependency? I really, really appreciate it. I like that analogy you made that we want to be the competition to the corruption.
Right. Well, first of all, I think sort of broad in the broad picture as far as us. So we have a dual mission. So we travel and teach the Constitution and the principles of liberty throughout the United States. And then we also, as I've said, have been crewing with Islander Evangelistic Ministries and bringing the gospel and bringing support and development to Haiti and the Caribbean. And we're not independently wealthy or, you know, supported by some grant or what have you. It's we sell the products that we make as far as the books and DVDs on the Constitution. and then the support of people who believe in the mission through donations. And this is what we do full time. This is our life. So we're happy doing what we do, and we do think it's important. As far as specifically in Haiti, so right now we're working in the south, on the south coast, where Matthew really hit the hardest. And a couple of years ago, we began building a church building / community center there, where obviously we have worship services or for church, but it's also used as a community center. So we'll host medical teams, with clinics, dental clinics, eye clinics, medical clinics, different things like that.
You know, people, what I liked about the building of the church was watching the Haitian people come together and learning new skills and building the church on their own, and actually participating in the Haitian economy.
Right.
I mean, I think that was very important. The materials came from Haiti, and they came from the Haitian people, and it was not just simply dropping off stuff.
Yeah, we believe that's an important part of the way we approach mission work. I want to be careful not to be critical of, you know, other people doing really great things, and you know, no criticism against how other people do some of what they do, but we think it's important for us to not just come in and sort of just hand out stuff and do all the work. We really felt concerned that if we did that we're robbing, maybe that's a strong term, but
it's crop dumping on every aspect.
We believe we are robbing the economy to an extent. So just as an example, you know, we have a national pastor who's really sort of caretaker, shepherding an entire village. I mean, he feeds people in his house, gives them water, and, you know, just takes care of all these folks in the village. And he's our national pastor. And they had sort of a brush stick arbor for a church to meet in. So we wanted and needed a building to be built. So we help sort of raise the funds and bring training and things like that. But we hired as much local work as we could, and we got local materials because they have masons, they have carpenters, they have electricians, they have plumbers. So if we go down there and do everything and sort of shut them out of this labor, then you're basically taking a job from a carpenter. You're taking a job from a mason, brick mason. So
you're keeping these people in a servitude type slavery, where they're just sitting around waiting for somebody to do something.
Where they look to someone else to do it for them. So this also gives ownership in the work, where they appreciate it more, they take care of it better. They learn skills through it, and we're participating. We're making the economic engine of the community go. So we believe those are important aspects on how to approach mission work.
Well, absolutely, and that's why this mission through the Islander Evangelistic Ministries, even though we are a small mission, is such a powerful and important mission. And when we come back after the break, I want to tell you how you can be a part of that mission.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back. Again, we have with us today my husband, J.C. Hall. We're talking about the other half of the Hall Ministry, the Islander Evangelistic Ministry, where we are missionaries, as a family missionary to Haiti, a unique missionary. We are not just simply living in a missionary camp and handing out boxes of stuff. We actually take sailboats, where we deliver our own aid, where we help these communities become self-sufficient through training and instruction and the utilization of local work and local means and local goods. And I believe in this, obviously, because this is what we do. I mean, we are a full-time missionary family. But I want other people to be able to participate in what we're doing there. And that doesn't mean you have to pack up and come live on our sailboat for 4 months and or go live in the Haitian community.
Although you can if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. Contact us. First, give us your website to lead us into the communications.
People can visit jchall.org. And have descriptions and pictures and things, and then links to the main ministry website of Islander Evangelistic Ministries. So jchall.org, they can find us there. They can donate there and support the mission.
You can sign up to get updates about our mission there as well.
Right. Go to the contact page, put your information in to receive updates, newsletters. You'll find, as soon as we update the website, you'll find some of the needs listed for the boat and the mission and things. I want to say this, too, about the mission, because I think this is important as far as how we approach the missions. We're also connected to local people. We're connected to the community. And it's not just us. We also partner with other ministries that are there doing various aspects. We can't do everything. We don't know everything. So we work in support of a lot of other ministries. Not all of them, religious in orientation or gospel ministries, but we have people down there who are specializing in dealing with water issues, mm-hmm. and we will work in support of those ministries. I mean, we go around when they come down because we're connected to the local community. We're there. Captain Bideau, our mission leader, he's been over there 30 years. He speaks fluent Creole. They consider him a Haitian. And we liaison with so many other...
He's respected by the local government there. And I think that's important. A lot of... how many times have we seen missionaries just come in and they're completely unfamiliar with the area and completely unfamiliar with the politics and completely unfamiliar with the people? And having that link that Islander Evangelistic Ministries gives with the familiarity of the people in the government is so important.
Yeah, we have watched mission teams come in well-intentioned. And come in with some solution that they have decided that the community needs and, you know, dump it off and just cause complete chaos and disruption and more harm than good because they lack a connection to that community. We really think that's important. It's really helpful to an establishment mission in the country, you know, when teams come in, like the young people come in and different folks come in and help that mission. But just this sort of mission tourism where you pick out a place and then a bunch of teenagers and whoever show up and there's no real local connection or established mission there, sometimes that can be problematic.
Dangerous.
And certainly dangerous to the people on the mission, but it can cause more problems after those folks leave. They don't see sort of the aftermath of what that type of approach causes, and that's a bigger discussion than we have to get in right now. But so we just think it's really important to have established roots and connection to the community, and so we do that, and we liaison with a lot of these other missions that come in that also have connections that have been there a long time. So we have people that do fish farms and water projects. I mean, we're out there turning wrenches. We're out there replacing pumps and wells. I mean, you know, putting on roofs and you know, swinging a hammer and helping pick up trash. I mean, anything you can think of, we're out there doing it.
Well, the in-country presence of the mission also helps to reduce the corruption of the aid that comes in. How many times have we seen the larger missions, the larger charitable organizations, whether they be secular or religious, come in and dump goods, and then all of a sudden they dump and go, and then what happens?
Right, it's unfortunate, and again, a lot of these people are well-intentioned, but some of them don't have the oversight in the country and people that they can trust. And so many times we've seen things that, you know, you think you've donated and that you're giving to the people, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the people that brought it, you know, they bring it, they do their thing and then they go. And then once they're gone and their back is turned, a bunch of these corrupt guys scoop it up and go sell it in the market.
They actually make the Haitian people buy the donated goods at markets. Yeah. I can't believe how many times we've seen that.
So we're very thankful that the Lord has given us this sort of structure where we have the boats that we can take stuff in, and we go directly, you know, to the site, and we offload this right into the hands of our people on the ground that are there, and we have oversight of all the stuff that's being delivered and the aid, the resources, the money, and so that's important in any third world, probably any country at all.
So if somebody
certainly there.
If somebody donates to on jchall.org, what percentage of that donation goes to administrative costs?
Oh, well, we have no administrators.
Administrators.
So it goes into the work. I mean, so it's everything that we're doing that we need to do what we do to get the boat supplied, get the stuff down there, preach the gospel, build the buildings, fix the water. Just as an example, we had a donation to the other boat for Rainman Water Maker. And after Hurricane Matthew, you know, we have the danger of cholera outbreaks and problems with the water. The water was unfit in so many places. So we spent hours and hours and hours just providing people with water all around the villages and the island, and they're
like
coming out.
Five villages that we were supplying. Well, there was like three villages and a couple fishing islands.
Yeah, it was
right?
Amazing. Maybe we can show a couple pictures to the audience on the show. We got some pictures of that on the television show. So yeah, that's something we need a Rain Man portable water maker for this vessel.
Well, let me just expand on that. So the Rainmaker cost about
Rainman.
The Rainman water maker cost about what?
They were about $5,000.
Okay, so for $5,000, the donation of $5,000 went directly to the purchase of the Rainman water maker, and is right now, since we've received that Rain Man water maker, is continually providing water.
No, as we speak, it's
making
water.
And that's what I
mean,
we speak.
And it has been since December.
Right, yeah. Right. So we're making water for at least three or four villages and for the fishing islands in this whole area. A $5,000 donation.
Yeah, somebody basically... We let people know the need, and somebody contacted, and they said, we want to purchase this water maker. It's a desalinator. It takes salt water and turns it into fresh water. They said, we want to buy this portable Rainman for you. And so they wrote a check for that. We contacted the people that sell it. And in fact, it was, I think it was like $6,000 or something that they had it for. And Captain Bideau said, you know, we're a nonprofit. Somebody gave us a check. This is the amount. This is what we had. And that's what the guy sold it to us for.
That is awesome.
So it was a real blessing. And now, you know, and so we want to be able to double that capacity. You know, we want to outfit this boat like the La Victoria is outfitted and be able to double that capacity. And we also had other people from other ministries with water makers that helped us. So it was a group ministry effort, because it's a big task getting that much water to that many people, while at that same time we were treating the wells and repairing the wells and making sure that those wells were clean and purified and getting ready. So we had three different organizations that we partnered with, and we were all, you know, down there fixing the water situation and providing water.
So we have needs. Needs right. That will directly, and donations that will go directly to the mission. No administrative costs, no collecting $500 million and creating four huts and that sort of thing. Talk to us in those last few minutes about those needs.
Yeah, well, and I'll reiterate, I said sort of tongue in cheek, if you don't believe in it, you shouldn't support it. But that's the notion there is, it's not like government. We're not forcing anybody to give us money or taking anything to do these things. And so that's one reason why we believe in what we're doing, the way we're doing it. The gospel is not by compulsion. You know, that's not forced upon people, nor should it be. And neither should charity be. So this is how charity ought to be done. So people who believe in it, support it, and then we do it privately, not taking someone's money by the force of government and engaging in charity. And so,
well, we saw through the fee article what happens when the government takes money and forced charity. Yeah, they turn it into corruption and they turn it into filling their own pockets.
Exactly. And they destroy whoever they're alleging to help. You know, they're not connected to Haiti. These people dumping all these goods, some of them may have the idea, oh, we're helping them because we're providing them with this food and they don't have food. So some of them may think that way and they think they're doing good, but they're sitting in an office, you know, in D.C. or somewhere here in America, and they have no connection nor real vested interest in the country, or just some pie in the sky, you know, belief that they're doing good, and they don't think about the consequences of what they're doing.
So how do people get in touch with the mission again and donate?
So again, jchall.org. You can go there and there's donate. Ways to donate on the page, and
they're tax deductible donations.
Tax deductible donation. We've been looking for what I call the 30-30 support team. So 30 people who will spend $30 a month in support of the mission, and because we're always year round, even when we're not in country, you know, we're preparing and trying to supply the ships and you know, get ready to ship out and take aid. So you don't just wake up one morning and all of a sudden you take off to Haiti with all this stuff. So we've got to identify the need, get the need, get it on the boat, get the boats ready, and get down there. So it's a year-round endeavor.
Well, we'll be right back after this break.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Well, I wanted to say thank you to my husband, JC, for joining us on the show and helping us understand how important this Haiti mission is, not just to the Hall family, but should be to everyone in America. The support of liberty is the mission of our founders, to be the bastion of liberty to the world. Do you have some, I'll give you a few minutes to make some closing comments and help people understand some things.
Yeah, I just appreciate everybody listening, appreciate the opportunity to get the word out for those who are interested. And again, as you said, it's the idea of spreading liberty abroad, the principles of liberty abroad. I personally don't want the statist to have the market cornered on, you know, running around the world and teaching other nations how they're supposed to operate. I mean, that's sort of the thing that we're dealing with now and have been dealing with for years, where that, you know, we sort of have been influenced by the European sort of socialist communist principles coming here. So I think rather than exporting war and exporting corruption, we should export liberty.
You know, I think that's amazing. As you were saying that, I've got these goosebumps thinking about this idea of the threat. Everybody is always talking about globalism, right? The threat of globalism to America. But what if globalism was not defined as Marxism? What if globalism was defined as liberty? If liberty was the contagious movement rather than Marxism?
Yeah, I was just thinking it's all about the definition. So, you know, the idea of globalism and making this giant conglomerate and tearing down sovereignty and, you know, being controlled by the melding of you know, whatever bizarre anti-liberty principles that they come up with today. So, yeah, I think that needs competition. And, I, you know, from my perspective as a pastor, former pastor, evangelist now. You know, I think those are sound gospel principles. As I said, the gospel is not coercive. The Bible says, whosoever will, let him come. And, you know, so many people like to talk about the Crusades and all of these offenses done in the name of Christianity and in religion. But that just because some people are doing this in the name of Christianity doesn't mean that's the proper definition of it. I believe these are caricatures of the true gospel. And so when you see a gospel that's coercive, that's not true to gospel principles. And so, you know, we want to teach people voluntarism and self-sufficiency and liberty. And so I think globalism and Marxism needs competition, and that's some of what we're doing.
I also want to mention one more thing before we let my husband JC go. JC, as he said, is also an evangelist, and when we're in the United States traveling and teaching the Constitution, there are lots of opportunities for people in churches and groups to have you come and teach them as well. And I just sort of want to give that lone little personal plug there. Churches and pastors and groups who want to understand this biblical perspective of liberty, this understanding of liberty as not a compulsion, but of a choice and of a gift from God. And I want people to understand, JC, how they can get in touch with you. Well, for the teaching aspect, they should contact us through the website, chrisannhall.com. But sort of give people an understanding of what you will teach them if you come to their place in the United States.
Well, in just a couple of days, I'm going to try to get the latest presentation put up on jchall.org. But people seem really helped by the presentation that I give. We were calling it Righteous Resistance to Civil Authority, but some of the more timid people I guess are not so apt to invite us in. So we thought we'd change it to Biblical Obedience to Government to get our foot in the door. And so I just go through the examples in the scripture, what I call biblical nullifiers, and come against this notion that some people preach that we're supposed to slavishly submit to tyrannical authority just because it's called government, and some, you know, alleging that the Bible teaches that when it does not. So I lay out the examples in the scripture and demonstrate that you know, we are to submit to lawful authority for a representation of the glory of God, but for the same reason, we are to resist unrighteous, unlawful authority.
Acts 5:29 wraps up the entire idea of that. And I'm going to say thank you to Pastor Hall, and we'll be back after this break.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I am so excited to have my husband JC co-hosting with me. It is a whole lot of fun to not be sitting here by myself, and I think it's better for you as the audience to have an alternative perspective as well, not sort of contrary, but just simply an alternative perspective in what we do as a family. We really do as a family, as a team, and I think that it is valuable to this show for you to see the insight that he puts into our mission here at Liberty First. I also have a friend, and his name is C.L. Bryant. By show of hands, how many of you know C.L. Bryant? He is an amazing orator, a dedicated patriot, and a powerful warrior in the battle for liberty. He has his own radio show, and we've been working together on his radio show several times a year, and we've been talking together about doing a
presentation together, putting on a program where he and I come together as sort of a 1-2 punch in the defense of liberty. And if you don't know C.L. Bryant, I would like for you to go ahead and look him up on the internet and see who he is and listen to his radio show and feel the power of what he has to say. And then give us some feedback. Tell us here on chrisannhall.com. Send us an email. What do you think about Chrisann Hall and C.L. Bryant putting together a Saturday presentation somewhere in America, all over America, just taking some Saturdays and saying, hey, this is going to be a Liberty Saturday where we're going to hear from Chrisann Hall and we're going to hear from C.L. Bryant and we're going to walk away inspired and educated and ready for the battle. I want to hear from you on what you would think about that, because I think that that would be an amazing presentation of education to liberate. Today, or this week, was a very important anniversary, to liberty. On March 23rd, 1775, Patrick Henry gave his "Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death" speech. Now, I know that those were his closing statements, and I know that that was the sort of powerful drop-the-mic moment for Patrick Henry. But what Patrick Henry said in that entire speech is so powerful. Such historical reference. Such wisdom in human nature. In that speech, I think that I could do an entire class just simply running through the information in Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech. And I think that if you have not, if you've not read that Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, or you haven't read it lately, take this opportunity, the anniversary of March 23rd, 1775, to go and read it again. Because not only is it powerful, not only is it inspirational, it's relevant. The relevance of what Patrick Henry had to say in that March 23rd speech is just stunning. I get goosebumps when I read it every single time, because every single time I see the parallel of Patrick's concerns and Patrick's wisdom and his warnings playing out today with stunning precision. And I know we love the give me, forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what other, I know not what course others may take, but give me liberty or give me death. I know the power of that. But for me, there are so many powerful statements. The fourth paragraph for me is just the sort of the building, the crescendo up to that mic drop moment for Patrick Henry. And I want to share that fourth paragraph with you as an encouragement for you to go and read the whole thing. He says, "They tell us, sir, we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable of an adversary. But when shall we be stronger?" See, I want you to think about those words. They tell us we are weak, but when shall we be stronger? How many times do you hear from your politicians, "Well, you know, we really don't have the votes to make that happen. We really don't have what it takes to repeal the Health Care Act. We really don't have what we need to balance the budget, to cut the spending. We really don't have what we need to make that happen." What they're really saying is, we're just too weak. And the answer should be, hey, we gave you a Republican House. We gave you a Republican Senate. We gave you a Republican president. When will we be stronger? When will we be stronger? We've given you politicians, you everything you asked for. Now give us what we want. Don't tell us you can't. Don't tell us you're not able. 'Cause we're looking at you and saying we gave you everything. When will we be stronger? I think that these excuses, I think the absence of their activity, should be the greatest wake-up call to Americans who want limited government, who want a constitutional republic, who want representatives and not politicians. If your politician is giving you excuses, if your politicians vote to raise the debt ceiling, if your politicians vote for another continuing resolution, if your politicians vote for Obamacare Lite, or as we're calling it now, Rhino Care, they have shown their true colors. You know exactly who they are. They have shown you that they are not who they want you to believe. And they are people who make promises they have no intentions of keeping. What do you call those kind of people? Liars, deceivers, wicked, immoral. I mean, there's plenty of names there. But Patrick Henry says, they tell us that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable of an adversary. What adversary do we have when we have a majority in all two branches of government? Patrick Henry continues and says, when will we be stronger? Will it be the next week? Or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed? And when a government guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? What? Seriously? How can you not see the relevance today in the words and the warnings of Patrick Henry? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? This is the description of our political government today. Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs, hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot? How can we not see this? How can we not become outraged by the inaction and irresolution of those we have entrusted with this so important gift of liberty, not just to ourselves, but to our posterity, to our future, to the whole future of liberty? We're not talking about just the future of liberty. We're talking about the future of liberty throughout the world. Our founders had hoped, their vision was to create a corner of the world in which liberty would not just simply grow, but would expand across the globe. They had hoped that they were making an example for the whole world. And how will we spread that example when we sit back, imprisoned and petrified by irresolution and inaction? He says, shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot? Who are our enemies today? Who are the enemies of liberty? Those enemies would be those federal supremacists. Those enemies would be those judicial supremacists. Those people who believe that the only means of government can come and must flow from Washington, D.C. Those people who believe that all solutions lie in Washington, D.C. and all problems originate there as well. We are sitting back, allowing our enemies to pick up power, to reinterpret the Constitution, to mutate and alter our constitutional republic beyond what we had ever imagined it could be. Right before our eyes, transmuting America into a totalitarian kingdom because we sit back and hug, as Patrick Henry said, the delusive phantom of hope. He says, sir, we are not weak if we make proper use of those means by which the God of nature hath placed in our power. The millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty, and such in such a country as that which we possess, are invincible. I want you to think of that word again, invincible. Patrick Henry says, the millions of people, the millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty, and in such a country as that which we possess, are invincible by any force with which our enemy can send against us. If the liberty-loving people of America just simply united together in the common cause of liberty to control those enemies of federal supremacy, those enemies of judicial supremacy, they could do nothing to us. They could not stop liberty from being restored in America. My choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you want, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
You know, if there's one thing that I can tell you that I have learned from reading about the founders and their actions, was this understanding of unity. We need to become unified in America, unified under the cause of liberty. You see, today, that the only thing that Americans are unified in is division. This sounds sort of oxymoronic, but in truth, the only thing that we come together in unity for are the things that divide us. Unity in being a Republican, unity in being a Democrat, unity in being this, unity in being that, unity in being this sexual orientation, unity in being this racial member, this minority group. These unities are false unities. Because they are in reality division. The unifying factor that freed our people from the tyrannical oppression of a king, from dictators, from theft by government, the unifying factor was liberty. That's why Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. Samuel Adams said, liberty. No people will tamely surrender their liberties nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. He also said, if we tamely surrender our liberties, we encourage them to a lawless attack. John Adams said, liberty must at all hazards be supported. Benjamin Franklin, writing as Silence Do Good, said that the liberty of speech was the most important public freedom and the enemy to tyrannical government. It is liberty that must be the unifying factor in America, and we must come together in that unity again. I am reading a book called Desperate Sons. This is a very good history book. It is almost primarily an original source text. It's not completely original source text, but it is almost primarily original source text, where the author of Desperate Sons has actually pulled through all of the newspaper articles that still remain accessible, and he has poured through them and rebuilt a historical account from the newspapers and the writings of that day. It is amazing to see their unity. A unity that today would seem radical or extreme, I think, but a unity that is essentially important to the preservation of liberty. You see, to sort of give you an example, if the British government had mandated health care on the people in 1774 or 1769, the people in the American colonies would have simply said no. But not only would they have simply said no, they would have not just said no, they would have gone into action to enforce that no. There would have been public flyers posted on the corners and on the buildings saying, we publicly announce that we will not submit to this mandated government. We will not give in to government exceeding its boundaries and applying upon us a mandate to submit to their slavish oppression of our free liberty. And then they would have gone door to door and explained to their friends and their neighbors not only why this health care is slavery, but why they must not comply. Then they would have gone to the healthcare agents and said, we just want to put you on personal notice in our communities that if you try to enforce this on any one of our people, we will stand with them against you and you will be defeated. And then just simply not those words, but the actions themselves. So let's say a federal agent comes and tries to enforce this federal health care on a member of the community. The people wouldn't just simply stand and hold protests and rallies. They would be on the front steps. They would be standing physically in between the government and the people. This is the kind of unity we need in America.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Can you imagine the unity of 1769 again in 2017? People who are willing to stand up for each other. You actually risk less when you stand in unity. Because, you see, people like Joe Robertson would not be in federal prison right now if this were 1769. If this were 1769, when the EPA came to take Mr. Robertson's land and the federal agents came to take him into custody, it wouldn't have been Joe Robertson standing by himself. It would have been the entire community. There would have been people coming from all of the states coalescing on Mr. Robertson's property and saying, no, we will not allow you. This will not happen. That's what they would have done in 1769. That's exactly what they did in 1769. That's exactly what they did in 1774 when General Thomas Gage, governor of Massachusetts, tried to disarm the people in one town. It wasn't just the people of that town that came together. It was the people. Over 20,000 of them came together from all of the colonies and said no. They actually said what General Thomas Gage was doing was declaring war on America, on the American colonists. Declaring war. Gage was simply removing the powder from one powder house in one town. And the entire set of colonies rose up and declared it to be war against the people. And 20,000 men, aged 16 to 69, picked up their arms and marched towards Boston to stop General Thomas Gage. Thomas Paine said, "It is not in numbers that we gather our strength, but in unity." America needs a unification, a reunification, under the cause of liberty. Government has power because we are not united. Government has power because we stand alone. We have to stand together, as Franklin said, or we'll surely hang separately. This is not just going to end because Donald Trump is president. My goodness, if the indication of that must be the fact that we are not repealing entirely a full repeal of Obamacare, that we're creating a new Rhino Care, what more do we need to see that this is not going to just simply dry up and blow away because we have a brand new president? Joe Robertson is still in prison. The Amish farmer, and I'm sorry, I forget his name, is in prison for creating a salve out of chickweed. Not because somebody died, not because somebody got sick, not because they got a rash, but because the FDA said that he made an illegal label. His label was illegal. And they want him to spend the rest of his life in prison for an illegal label. In 1774, that would have never happened because the people would have come together and said, no, we will not allow this to happen. I mean, think about this. Do we really believe the Declaration of Independence? We quote it. We believe it to be a foundational document. But do we really believe those words? Do we believe that some truths are self-evident? Do we believe that all men are created equal? Do we believe that they are endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights, with rights that cannot be taken away? Do we believe that governments are created by men, and that their only source of power, their only source of power, is through the consent of the people? Do we believe that all just power exercised in government is the power that is limited by the people? Do we believe that when any form of government operates contrary to our God-given rights, when any form of government steps up to destroy our rights, do we really believe that we hold the power to alter or abolish? Do we believe that we have a duty to alter or abolish? I wonder what we really believe. I wonder, can we become unified again? If we're to become unified, we're going to have to lay down the divisions. We're going to have to give up party politics. We're going to have to give up our personal desires and our drives for our own feelings of safety, comfort, and security. We're going to have to re-engage in some truths with boldness, with perseverance, with tenacity. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over personality. We're going to have to become unified in liberty. We're going to have to become unified in truth. And if that anniversary of Patrick Henry's speech can be that reminder, can be that inspiration, can we please go back and read his words? those unifying words of that day, can they be a unifier again to us? Can we come together so we can provide hope to the rest of the world? So the rest of the world can see that a people still believe in liberty. If we think that we are an island unto ourselves, we are fooling ourselves. There are people in other countries all over the world who are watching us. Can I make a bold statement? A bold statement in humility, not wanting to sound egocentric in any way, shape, or form. But I believe this in my heart, that the people of Great Britain, that they came together and they left the European Union because they saw an inspiration in America dedicated to liberty. The British people voting, coming together to leave the tyranny and the despotism of the European Union on their people, voting to leave that in overwhelming numbers. Can I just humbly submit to you that I believe is because they were inspired by the stand of people in America. Because you see, that's the thing that happens with liberty. It is contagious. It is infectious. It makes people see liberty and want to have it for themselves. What kind of message do you want to send across the world? We are being divided by the enemy. Those federal supremacists, those judicial supremacists are dividing us. Dividing us. Because it's unity that gives us power. So let's take this anniversary of Patrick Henry's speech and get educated. And get educated on the Constitution, on the value of liberty. Because you see, liberty was the driving force. Liberty is what brought our founders together to say, we want to be free. This understanding of liberty, that it was the great unifier. It's people like Dianne Feinstein, these federal supremacist people, who hate the Constitution because it limits their power, who hate liberty because liberty says the people are greater than government. That people are the creator of government. And that government can have no authority that does not originally exist in the people, in the individual, himself. I believe that's why Dianne Feinstein hates originalism. When she said that originalism is really troubling. I don't know if you got to see that in the Gorsuch hearing. She said, and I quote, Judge Gorsuch has also stated that he believes judges should look to the original public meaning of the Constitution when they decide what a provision of the Constitution means. This is personal, she says, but I find this originalist judicial philosophy to be really troubling. In essence, it means that judges and courts should evaluate our constitutional rights and privileges as they were understood in 1789. However, to do so would not only ignore the intent of the framers, that the Constitution would be a framework on which to build, but it severely limits the genius of what our Constitution upholds. That sounds really good, doesn't it? Only it's completely wrong. Our framers did not intend for the Constitution to be a living, breathing document. Our framers did not intend for the Constitution to be interpreted based on popular whim or political waves and powers.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
The brilliance of what Dianne Feinstein is doing is actually an Alinsky tactic. Right off the get-go, she's going to demonize just simply the term original intent. Putting, as my husband would say, the skull and crossbones poison mark on original intent, building a barbed wire offense around original intent so that nobody will want to actually step up and understand what original intent actually means. Because you see, it's poison. You don't even want to go there. It's so bad, these white elite slave owner guys, you can't follow what they actually meant, what they intended, and you don't even want to know because it's so bad. That's what she's doing. It is pure psychological, mental manipulation. And it keeps people from the truth. This originalist judicial philosophy is troubling. Do you know what is troubling to me? Dianne Feinstein is troubling to me. The tactics in which people like Feinstein, who trump their living, breathing document lie, full of fear, full of hate, they are what trouble me. Because now who's gonna go, some unsuspecting and generous person may want to know the truth, but they don't want to know the truth now because it's scary, right? We don't want to be like those guys, those rich white slave owners. We don't want to know what the Constitution really means. And they'll never understand. They'll never get to hear how originalism actually contributes to liberty and justice for all. You see, originalism says, we don't care what the mob says. We don't care what the powerful say. We will ensure that all are treated equally with dignity. Originalism says we are not ruled by mob mentality, but by principles of liberty. Originalism is the shield against slavery, masters, and oppressors. Why? Because the basic underlying principle of the Constitution is liberty. It is declared in the Declaration of Independence. It is recorded in the preamble to the Constitution, you know, to secure the blessings of liberty. The Bill of Rights was incorporated into the Constitution as a further declaration of the people's liberties. Originalism not only understands this, but embraces it with the knowledge that liberty was the stated goal, the original intent of the designers of the Constitution. Liberty is a principle based in natural law that declares all men are created equal, with equal rights and equal protection under the law. Originalism is not only the correct legal way to apply the Constitution, it is the only way that guarantees and secures liberty. The cry against slavery and the oppression of minorities always pointed back to the Constitution. It was Frederick Douglass, it was Martin Luther King Jr. who recited the lines of our foundational document as the goal to end oppression of the minorities. It is our foundational documents, this principle of liberty that says all men are created equal. What is Dianne Feinstein saying? We are not all created equal? That we should not all be judged by equality under the eyes of the law? Is Dianne Feinstein now standing in opposition to Frederick Douglass, in opposition to Martin Luther King, these champions of civil rights who said we must aspire to be who our founders wanted us to be by embracing this liberty, by ensuring the constitutional integrity? It was originalism they pointed to, not a living, breathing document. Is Dianne Feinstein now preaching against equality, that all men are created equal? Does Dianne Feinstein now want us to live in a class-based system where we are not equal? A living, breathing mode of interpretation for the Constitution is arbitrary. It creates a government that is dependent upon current social trends and the will of the powerful. Can you imagine all of America being run by the will of Dianne Feinstein? Living, breathing mode is just another name for a banana republic. And it makes you a slave. We must know and get educated. God bless. See you tomorrow.